Good morning. Welcome to Brookings. My name is Mauricio Cárdenas, and I'm the director of the Latin America Initiative. We have the great pleasure and honor to have three very prominent speakers to talk about the Western Hemisphere, the political landscape, and certainly to talk about the OAS as part of that political landscape. The first question I want to pose to the audience is if there is any objection for us to hold this event in Spanish. If the audience feels comfortable with Spanish, we'll do it in Spanish. Otherwise, we'll stick to English. So it's a matter of raising your hand if you feel strongly about doing it in English.
All right.
So that means we'll do it in English. As you are aware of, Latin America is undergoing important changes. The region as a whole is a region that has strengthened its economies and has also strengthened its democracy. The region is also undergoing major political changes in terms of choices, in policies, in strategies. And as part of that change in Latin America, in the past few years, there has been a significant number of initiatives to create groups, to form blocs. The first one, UNASUR, which includes the countries of South America, was launched 3 years ago with the idea of creating a space for the discussion of a number of issues, all of them related to development, economic, political, diplomatic, military. Most recently, the Grupo de Rio meeting in Cancun launched another initiative, the creation of the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States. The distinctive feature of that community or intention is the exclusion of the United States and Canada to have a regional grouping that will be another forum for the debate of political and economic issues. It's been difficult for those innovations to secure the support from the governments in terms of financial commitments, the creation of secretariats, and they have remained to a large extent as meetings and gatherings of heads of state and ministers of foreign affairs. So the only institution with enough capacity not only to convene the entire region, but also to implement and execute is the OAS. Alberto Lleras Camargo, a former president of Colombia and secretary general of the OAS, once said that if we didn't have the OAS, we would have to invent it, meaning that the OAS is a very relevant and necessary organization, and that the OAS has, throughout the years, strengthened its capacity to promote democracy, human rights, and political freedoms in the region. As you are aware, the OAS has been under the leadership of José Miguel Insulza for the past 5 years. José Miguel is a very well-known Chilean socialist. He was a very distinctive member of the Chilean government for 10 years. He was a minister of the Interior, Ministry of the Presidency, and Minister of Foreign Affairs. So he's got a long experience in government in his own country. Prior to that, He was living in exile during the Pinochet years, first in Italy and then in Mexico, working on a range of issues basically related to international affairs and political science. We have also the honor to have as panelists two very prominent former presidents in Latin America. President Alejandro Toledo, whom you know was president of Peru during years of great economic success. He led economic reform and political change in Peru, resulting in a tremendous dividend in terms of economic growth, an average rate of 6% during his tenure, and social progress. He has been affiliated with the Brookings Institution since last year as a senior fellow, and he is the president of the Global Center for Democracy and Development, who is a joint sponsor of this event. And the center promotes discussion and debate on issues related to development. He'll tell us more about the issues that they're working on, and particularly with the work of other former presidents from Latin America that have recently launched a serious proposal on the social challenges for Latin America. And we also have President Martín Torrijos, who was president of Panama until last year. And President Torrijos was the head of his party, the PRD, the Democratic Revolutionary Party of Panama. And as head of the party, he also held very significant posts of great responsibility in the international socialist movement as chairman for the Latin American group. President Torrijos also was a great economic reformer, also had tremendous results in the economic front in Panama with rates of growth that surpass those of Peru, which were really great achievements. 6% average growth is a remarkable. But in Panama, economic growth during these past 5 years was spectacular. During his tenure, President Torrijos held a referendum for the expansion of the Panama Canal, which initially was thought to be a contested issue, and it was brought to the primary electorate. With very positive results, and as you know, Panama's canal is undergoing a serious expansion that will bring a significant amount of resources to that country. They're in a unique position to comment about the challenges of our region and the way they translate into the OAS, and I think we'll be privileged to listen to their comments. So the way in which we're going to structure this session is that we're going to start with President Toledo. He'll give us his thoughts on the challenges and the road ahead for the region. Then we'll go and listen to President Torrijos, and we'll have as the last speaker, Secretary Insulza. This first round should take us about an hour, and then we'll have time to begin a conversation, hopefully in the most informal way, with your participation. We'll reserve time for us to engage in that dialogue. So let me begin by welcoming President Toledo, thanking him for his presence and his sponsorship of this event. I'm also going to be the timekeeper. So you have 20 minutes, President Toledo. And again, thank you very much for your presence today.
Thank you very much, Mauricio. I'm glad that we were able to put this panel that is very timely in the relationship between North America and Latin America and the Caribbean. Secondly, let me make it public that I'm very proud of being a member of the Brookings Institution as a non-resident senior fellow. And I'm glad that we are able to put forward this joint event between the Global Center for Development and Democracy and the Brookings Institution. Let me go straight on to share some thoughts with you, and then hopefully we have some questions and answers. The election of President Obama in the United States has generated an enormous interest and expectations around the world. And Latin America is not an exception. I think that the region as a whole has been monitoring, have been following up what the expectations that the election of President Obama has generated. And while the Obama administration is understandably enough focused on a formidable task elsewhere, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, China, Russia, where that is taking place, let me suggest that there are three crucial areas why the intra-hemispheric relations are increasingly of crucial importance. One, it is a piece of data that in Latin America there's around 200 million men and women who are living in poverty and in social exclusion. In a continent which still is being characterized by a region where a very accentuated inequality and income distribution as well as in wealth is the most unequal continent in the world. It's not the poorest continent of the world, but it's the most unequal one. Many people in the region are having some problems now. They also had the expectations that as economic growth taking place in the region, in region-wise, before this global financial meltdown took place, people had expectations that poverty will be reduced, and they also will be participants of the benefits of economic growth. Well, it hasn't been that great for that segment of the population, between 180 and 200 million people in a continent of 500 million people. So there is a sense of discouragement, particularly with democracy. And that discouragement is nourishing some politicians to recycle some dangerous authoritarian populist formulas in the region. And they find a very fertile land for the expansion of this political orientation. Number two, while the United States is absorbed with all the issues in the world, and understandably enough, China is becoming a bulldozer in the region, buying raw materials and aggressive investment. At the same time, China and Iran are crossing the ocean, and in the case of Iran, to trying to purge raw material to absolutely insane purpose of creating an atomic weapon in a not very kosher relationship between Iran and Venezuela. This is one crucial importance for us in the process of reading the dynamics or the economics and political relationships in the region. Third, Latin America will continue to have a strong relationship with the United States. Right now, the Latin population of the United States, it's around 40 million. 40 million Latinos are in the United States. That's a piece of data. Some projectors indicate that by the year 2050, this Latin population will double. That's a reality. What it creates us a concern is that if economic growth that we have observed in the region before the financial crisis, the region was growing at an average of 6% region-wise. By 2008, the region was growing at an average of 6%. Peru grew close to 10%, 9.8%. Well, that generated a great expectations that the fruits of economic growth will somehow reach the poor and the excluded. And by doing that, we not only will reduce poverty, make some progress in social inclusion, but we'll have more faith in democracy. Well, if we are not able to reduce poverty and social exclusion, there is the risk that poverty could truncate economic growth and could undermine democracy. When one looks at the political spectrum in the region, there are people who are disenchanted with democracy, but at the same time, our great need for creating a unity in the region, integration in the region, becomes a little bit more diluted and weakened. In the Andean community, we thought that we can make some progress, yet we are dispersed. We have not yet been able to get, for example, a free trade agreement between the Andean community and the United States, or the Andean community and the European Union. What we are witnesses are the creation of a new multilateral institutions in the region, which creates a problem for the long-established multilateral political institutions, such as the OAS. An OAS that is much more inclusive, but it begins to a process of creation of new institutions that overlaps their role. Perhaps when, with all due respect to my friend, Secretary General Insulza, maybe even this recent new institution created about 2 weeks ago in Cancun is a message that the OAS, and we are all part of the OAS, we need maybe to work harder in order not to become redundant or provide the material for all the people to create other institutions. The OAS belongs to all the citizens of the United States, but of the Americans as a whole. Beginning when? With the need? Looking at the future. Looking at the future. The need maybe for redefining the agenda of the OAS and redefining the items of the agenda of the relationship between the United States and Latin America and the Caribbean. In the OAS, this is a fact. Mr. Insulza, which I have put it in black and white for a publication that you are doing, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe looking at the future, there is the urgent need to put more emphasis from the part of the OAS to strengthen democratic institutions that work more transparent, independent, not subject to manipulations, and institutions that are accountable to their citizens. The need to work together to strengthen democratic institutions, a judicial system, the parliaments, the freedom of the press, human rights. This is part of our work. I know it could say, one could say, this is the agenda of each individual's country. But we are living now in a big nation of Latin America. I think that that's one crucial issue that maybe we need to sit together and redefine the agenda of the OAS looking at the new challenges that the continent is confronted in conjunction with North America. Second, the relationship between the United States and Latin America and the Caribbean. I think there is a space to redefine the items of the agenda between Latin America, the Caribbean, and the United States. And go beyond our classical common interest. Important for sure, very important. The issue of security, the fight against narco-traffic, the need to increase our free trade agreements, or even the issue of Cuba. Well, that has been more or less the main components of our relationship within the Americans. But maybe there is a need to go beyond that, looking at the future. The need to sit down together in a round table to discuss the need for refreshing and redefining the relationship, looking at the future. Democratic institutions, climate change, clean water, the digital divide, the corporate social responsibility as a part of the agenda that goes beyond the classical relationship that we have had. This thoughts and proposition about relooking and redefining in a roundtable, I mean, in which will participate countries as big as Brazil, but also Trinidad and Tobago. The motivation of this proposition, and I have put it in black and white in an op-ed, that is not motivated by the fact of that the Latin American countries, we are not asking for more economic resources. We are just asking a more horizontal relationship. Mauricio has pointed very well. In the last 15 years, the Latin American region has experienced enormous changes economically, politically, socially, diplomatically. Among the countries of the region and between the regions and the South. Some piece of data. The United States is no longer the main demander of exports of Latin America. Latin American production exports 33% to the United States and the rest to Asia, to Europe. And the internal composition of economic growth have changed, consequently has become much more diversified. That's a piece of data. The United States is no longer the main investor in Latin America. It's the European Union. Mainly England and Spain. So here you have new pieces of data that show us the manifestation of the changes that have taken place economically. Socially, you have new movements. Unfortunately, one part of the fragility of the democratic institutions are the weakness of the political parties. And so we have more, about 80% of Latin Americans are independents. They don't believe to political parties. We're going to have an election pretty soon in Peru. There are 26 candidates. And I'm sure in Colombia, I don't know how it's going to be, but it reflects the lack of the weakness of democratic institutions.
President.
Let me conclude. So these 2 points of trying to think and sit around and think through about what are the challenges that our organization confronts looking at the future and the need to think through together in a more horizontal relationship to examine the items of the relationship between the United States and Peru will be of enormous help. My last point, hopefully, Latin America could take the enormous advantage that the prices of the natural resources in the international market are still high to a large extent to the growth of China, but there is the imperative need to use those resources to invest in the minds of our people and constructing economies of knowledge that will make us much more competitive in the world among the other regions. I will stop over here.
Thank you. Thank you, President Toledo. Mm-hmm. Let's now give the floor to President Torrijos.
No, thank you, Mauricio, and thank you, Secretary General, President Toledo, for this opportunity at the Brooklyn Institute. I have to confess that President Toledo called me a few weeks ago and told me we were going to talk about the social agenda of Latin America. Since then, he got me studying a lot. more on the issues of the new political spectrum in Latin America, and especially about the OAS, you know, coming up elections and with the president, the secretary general. I have written something more related to the OAS, but I know we will have time in the question and answer period to talk about the relations within Latin America and between Latin America and the United States. In 1948, the former Colombian president and first secretary general of the OAS, Alberto Lleras Restrepo, Camargo, I'm sorry, said that the organization would be what its member states wanted to be. This statement, which was valid at the beginning of the Cold War, remains relevant 60 years later, especially today when discussing the future of this organization and how it needs to adapt in order to be more effective, support of countries and of our own hemisphere. It has been very accurately stated that rather than reaching a time of change, we are facing a new era. Now, to the vestige of the past, we must add new social, political, and economic reality, as well as a series of global problems that requires the immediate actions of all member states and actually of all countries of the world. The debate over the future of the OAS is very short-sighted if it is limited to analyze the weakness and failures, which is some attribute to the commitment and priority development almost exclusively to defending the basic principles of the organization. Nevertheless, it will be an exercise incomplete without analyzing how to overcome the distrust between the member states and other problems, some problems still old, some new problems, which today require us to address in this debate. It is certainly correct to defend the right of self-determination, respect for human rights, the right to live in democratic states, and to defend the political independence, sovereignty, and territorial integrity of member states. But it must not end there. I believe it's important to recognize that there are clear cases of frustration in part of the collective or some of its members, not to mention the frustration of the Secretary General, which I personally know, at the blatant disregard or dismissal commitments and obligations enshrined in the chapter. Still, this should not lead us to lose sight of the main objective. The OAS has not yet been successful in isolating the ideological legacy that since the early years has prejudiced dialogue. Neither it has managed to compensate with appropriate balance and respect the disparity that persists in an organization where the immense powers of some coexist with the very limited resources of others. This often generates questions about the legitimacy of some member state actions inside and outside the organization. What is the value is that despite this, the states continue to converge at the OAS as a strategic meeting point. The problem is that often the issues at hand are decisions and actions already carried out, and the dialogue bounces of clear, defined, and unwavering position. Overcoming difference is less complicated when it comes to the South side resolving disputes. And I know the Secretary General might not agree because of the recent events. Yet substantially more bitter in the North-South relation or when the interests affect hemispheric relations, when the sheer complexity of the issues and positions exceed the management ability of the regional organization. Needless to say, if all states would subscribe to the agreements of the organization,
it would certainly be conducted to overcome our difference. For instance, a universal acceptance of the terms of the American Convention on Human Rights and accordingly compliance with the decision of the Inter-American Court. Likewise, the commitment made in the Inter-American Democratic Chapter will facilitate the harmonious coexistence between our states and the successful management of the organization. But when the OAS faces problems that concern the internal order of state members as it relates to human, political, social, or cultural rights, it becomes evident that the institutional mechanism put in place to promote and mediate the solution are ineffective. The OAS does not have flexible yet binding mechanism to build consensus and safeguard citizens' rights above the state's interests. Moreover, it's common to conveniently blame the Secretary General for the ineffectiveness of the OAS when certain issues are left unsolved, such as the recent case in Honduras, or to point out alleged inaction against human rights violations, threat to representative democracies, or media censorship in certain countries. In this regard, it is essential to reiterate that neither the Secretary General nor the Permanent Council of the OAS have the mechanism required to properly address these issues. It is important to remember that this organization was designed to coordinate the hemispheric defense against extraterritorial military threats rather than to solve the problem of sustainable development and strengthening of democratic institutions. That original design has contributed in some cases to a failure to recognize the natural diversity of our people and the plurality of ideas and political expectations. Beyond acknowledging the richness of that diversity, it is essential that we concur that rather than being a municipal complaint office for lawsuit and domestic quarrels, the OAS should be an organization to converge, consultation, and to cooperation within diversity. This is precisely its virtue. If we want the OAS to be truly effective, we must create the political and legal instruments that can rise to the challenge and expectation of our time, along with the positive and proactive agenda aimed at building confidence and coordinating joint efforts to address the common challenge that unite the hemisphere as well to solve the problem that might divide it. The inventory changes has been broadly agreed upon. The financial crisis, energy and food crisis, climate change, the crisis of the states and public security against organized crime and terrorism, the fight against poverty and marginalization, the need to promote integration by improving both physical and human infrastructure, just to mention only the most urgent ones. However, very often the resolution of the OAS General Assembly are rather lengthy and repetitive statements of solidarity that our leaders take back to their country as a diplomatic trophy, although the urgent problems of the region remain unaddressed. I'm convinced that the OAS has no choice but to redefine itself in order to contribute actively and effectively to solve our common challenge. This enterprise requires shifts and coordinated actions. The speed with which we undertake this endeavor depends on the willingness, the detachment, and the historical vision of our presidents and head of states. Working together in one or more summits or through the mandate given to their foreign ministers. From this point of view, I welcome the establishment of the Commonwealth of Latin America and the Caribbean and its liaison with the OAS. If each of these instances offers something the other cannot, they could mutually necessarily be complement to each other. The OAS has historical opportunity to be a point of convergence, understanding, cooperation, not only for its member states, but also of all a region, of all region organizations, as well to become the forum of forum and a space of virtuous cooperation where states, in their capacity as representatives of the interests of the citizens, award greater rationality and efficiency to the community of organizations. Instead of persisting solely as a forum to undertake political and legal quarrels, the OAS must build instruments to achieve progress in areas of cooperation between our nations and to solve education, scientific and technological, economic, social and security issues. It should strengthen its capacity to deal with problems as diverse as cross-border crimes, terrorism, human trafficking, and to coordinate key issues that concern citizens, such as the fights against poverty, as well as the public health concerns, such as the fight against HIV, AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria. Dear friends, if I have to summarize in one sentence the past and the future, it would say that the OAS cannot remain the last bastion of the Cold War, but must rebuild as a spearhead into the 21st century. Thank you very much.
Thank you, President Torrijos. Let me say a word as a way of introduction to Secretary General Insulza, who has been in the spotlight. There is a debate here in Washington on the issues pertaining to the OAS. But when the OAS was created back in 1948, the idea, the general theme was that the Latin American countries did not have a voice loud enough in the UN to make sure that the UN was functional for the hemisphere. And the idea of creating an organization of states in the Americas was motivated by the need to have an organization that could oversee democratic practices in the region and that could serve as a forum for the coordination of issues in a broad number of topics among the countries.
I see.
Latin Americans have become increasingly aware of the importance of democracy and democratic values. One way of bridging the comments made by President Toledo with those of President Torrijos is that the social challenges, the economic issues in Latin America, at the end of the day, if you want to search and dig deep for explanations, have to do with democracy. Democracy has a tremendous dividend in social and economic terms, and we in Latin America are aware of that. But democracy is more than just holding regular elections. Democracy is about having strong political parties. It's about the freedom of the press, the freedom of speech. Democracy is about the respect of human rights as well. And the region is far from perfect in those areas. And whenever an issue arises, whenever one of those imperfections becomes too evident, all the fingers are pointed at the OAS. Because the OAS is seen as the organization that has to correct, preserve, generate the sanctions. And that's why the OAS is in the spotlight. Last year, we had the issues related to Honduras. Cuba has been a pending issue where much progress was made last year during the General Assembly of the OAS, but still there is the need of, on the one hand, assuring that there is a reform in Cuba and of course, respect for the democratic charter. Some countries have complained about the lack of democratic practices in Nicaragua and Venezuela. So this is a very contested issue. Here in Washington, the debate is very active. One piece of that debate is a recent bill that was presented to the U.S. Senate by Senators Menendez and Kerry on reforms to the OAS in various areas, but certainly in touching issues related to funding of the OAS, transparency in the use of those funds, etc. Senator Lugar has, or the office of Senator Lugar has recently presented a report also on the OAS. But the general view is that the OAS does what its member countries want. It operates pretty much on a consensus-driven scheme, not like the UN with a Security Council. And that means that the OAS essentially serves as a, in the scheme of a permanent assembly that goes on issues and does intervene and act in as a result of the preferences of all of its members. There are of course issues related to the structure, issues related to the funding of the organization, but the relevance, the importance of the OAS is never questioned. One issue that is often not does not receive enough attention is how well the OAS does in dealing with specific issues that are more of a technical nature, like the Human Rights Inter-American Commission, issues related to the respect of freedom of the press and freedom of speech. In those areas, the OAS does have a tremendous record in serving as the natural vehicle in the region. So with that introduction, I welcome Secretary General Insulza, because his presence here is not only an honor to Brookings, but also because so much has been said, so much debate. And I'm sure you'll find ways of bridging these two comments that go from the general problems of the region to the more specific issues related to the OAS. So thank you again for coming.
Well, thank you very much. And with all due respect, I wouldn't call that an introduction, just another intervention in the panel. So because, but I will just I will try to center on the issue that has become important here. I must admit that I had more or less the same impression of President Torrijos at the beginning. It was basically he wanted to discuss the social agenda inside the organization, and I was very much ready for that. I don't. Somebody would say that with 10 days left for the next election of the OAS, and being the only candidate, probably I shouldn't come to panels and forums, just stay home, and not risk to make any comments that we might take any votes from it. But I will go into the matters that have been discussed here. I think that there are two ways. I mean, there's one first thing I would like to say. I attended the Cancun meeting of the heads of state and government of Latin America and the Caribbean, as I had attended the previous one, the one in the many, many meetings of the Rio Group and the CALC in Bahia. And I never saw there one danger for the OAS, really. I don't see how that process, which, by the way, has a lot of previous rehearsals, can threaten an organization that is hemispheric by nature. As somebody said here, those in Cancun were 550 million, and those not in Cancun were 330 million. I don't think that you can really compare to therefore the OAS with the calc and the, I mean with the calc or the real loop. By the way, the calc or what was, I never read in the declaration, I don't know if somebody read, in the statement of the president and heads of state from Cancun, any time that the word organization, that was never called an organization. It was called a referent. It was called a discussion, a commonwealth. The issue was discussed. And most of the countries said that they didn't want to call it an organization. And when it was proposed to call it a union, they said that they didn't want to call it a union either. And that's why they called it a community, which is not secondary, because that means that there's no attempt to create a parallel institution. That, with all due respect for the freedom of the press, is an invention of some of the press media. I admit, and here I go into the issue, that one of the things discussed and not agreed on, or that some of the members of that meeting may want an OAS without the United States, as some others that are more present in this kind of panel, not in the other ones, want an OAS without all those guys who are saying an OAS without the United States. Because there's also, I mean, on both sides, there is a concept that's completely contrary to the whole idea of the Organization of American States. Article 4 of the Charter of the OAS says that any independent country that is willing to sign the charter is a member of the Organization of American States. It doesn't say it has to be rich or poor, small or large. It doesn't say it has to be socialist or capitalist. It doesn't have to be one system or the other. It says any independent state that wants to be a member of the Organization of American States can sign the charter. And that's a fact. The OAS was conceived as a multilateral institution. And I make the difference, and I'll certainly go then into the matters of the Democratic Charter, because I think that's perfectly compatible with the Democratic Charter. It's a multilateral institution, not as a supranational institution. It was not supposed, no Security Council, no group of the largest. By the way, if there was a group of the largest, let me tell you that 7 or 8 countries pay more than 95% of the budget of the OAS. So that wouldn't really serve any purpose. It was created on the concept that this was a multilateral institution, not a supranational institution. Of course, multilateralism today does not mean the same it meant. By the way, it wasn't created against it because the United Nations was not enough. If it were for that, it would be more important to have an OAS today than in 1948, because in 1948, only the Latin American members, the Latin Americans of members of the UN, were 1/3 of the UN. Today, all the members of the OAS are 1/6 of the UN. But anyway, if it were for the U.S., if it were only a multilateral institution of the past, then certainly the OAS would be a problem solver. Problems between Ecuador and Colombia, we try to solve. Problems between Guatemala and Belize, we try to solve. The problems between common countries. That's what the multilateralism was until 1948. But in the Second World War, or after the Second World War, a new form of multilateralism has grown. Not in every institution, but in some institutions, as the European Union, that is very visible. Countries not only agree on ways of solving problems between them, they also agree on ways of promoting common values, common purposes, and common interests. And that's what creates a modern multilateral institution. And I think that we are on the way, on the road, to create a modern multilateral institution. And that is what they, of course, we have some long story on the long history on this. That is what the Inter-American Charter of Human Rights is. Because human rights is certainly, I mean, it can be theoretically a universal problem, but I mean, rights are violated in each country. But since it's a common and shared value, it falls inside a modern multilateral organization as the Organization of American States. And then that's what the Inter-American Democratic Charter is. It's not an imposition. It's an agreement among sovereign countries. I mean, nobody says to join these organizations you have to be democratic. It's all the members that say we are all going to be democratic and we agree on the following notions of democracy. And some of them you were mentioning, by the way, you said that. Not only elections, but several other things. That's it. I mean, we could have also said we're all going to be democratic and we're going to have elections. And the rest is another matter. No, we say we're going to be democratic and that means elections, means rule of law, means separation of powers, means human rights, means freedom of the press, means transparency, several other things. What we are now on the way of creating, or we're going to create, is the appropriate instruments to make a reality those common values. And we have some of them. The Commission on Human Rights is an instrument to make those values active. And it gets into a lot of trouble for that, of course. There's always a lot of resistance for that. Of course, we would all love to have a similar system, a similar universal adherence to the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, which is mandatory. It can order the countries to do things. Unfortunately, only the Latin Americans and half the Caribbeans, or a little more than half the Caribbeans, have signed and ratified the Convention on Human Rights and therefore are members of the court. Some other countries are not members of the Court of Human Rights. We have a similar procedure in the Inter-American Convention for violence against women. We have a form of verification of countries, the way countries are fulfilling that. We have the same thing on drugs. We have something similar on corruption. We're moving in that direction. But any movement in that direction necessarily has to understand that this is a multilateral institution. The old sentence that fleets sail at the speed of the slower boat and not the fastest boat is essential in multilateral institutions. We can do, and here President Geras Camargo comes again, the OAS is what its member countries want it to be. It doesn't have a king. It doesn't have a president. The other day, I gave an interview to a Colombian magazine, and the title was exactly what I had wanted it to be. I am not the president of the region. I am the secretary general of the regional organization. And therefore, I do exactly what countries want me to do. So the answer is, why do you go to Venezuela? I mean, why do you go to Honduras and not to Venezuela? Is, well, that's what the countries decided. And the answer to several other things, but that doesn't mean that the organization is not effective, but it has its limits. It has its limits. And let me show you something about the effectiveness. Honduras, was the 10th controversial issue we had to deal with in these 5 years. The first one was Nicaragua. When I joined the OAS, I was immediately called to Nicaragua because the Congress was about to vote the president out. We stayed there for about four months. It wasn't an easy task, precisely because someone in the government, the foreign minister of that time, had proclaimed that the OAS was coming to put things in order. Well, nobody wanted to talk to us. We had to wait for about 2 days to have the Congress receive us. Because everybody felt that that was not the role of the OAS. But we managed there. We kept Dante Caputo there for about 4 months. And finally, the government could finish its term, and there was an election and all that. Then we had Ecuador. There had been a removal of the president because the president removed the Supreme Court, and they didn't have a Supreme Court. And we went there as observers, and finally, as promoters, and finally that was appointed. And we followed the Ecuadorian press process all the way. And Bolivia. Bolivia was certainly a difficult issue. Now, we have to talk about the problems who is the president. We are talking about, this is the poorest country in the region, in South America, and the worst distribution of income in the region. The poorest 20% of Bolivians took home less than 2% of national income. So some changes were needed there. Not only democratic changes, some other changes were needed there, so that the issue wasn't easy. But we stayed on in Bolivia, and we had several breakdowns. But we finally managed that let me say just one thing about myself. I was the only international representative of an international organization standing there by the president when he signed the new constitution of Bolivia. That you would have never dreamed of the OAS before. And then we should talk about Guatemala. The president came to say thank you today for everything we had done to avoid any kind of breakdown. And several others, and of course Colombia and Ecuador. But you know, when we finished the Assembly of the Organization of American States in San Pedro Sula, and we had solved the issue of Cuba, I've never heard anybody speak any time again about Cuba and the OAS since then. We got rid of an old resolution that was completely, Cold War. It was Cold War. It was a Cold War resolution. It spoke about the Sino-Soviet axis, about Marxist-Leninist regimes, and about Cuba being a threat to the security of the Americas. It was a Cold War resolution. It got out. But it was done in a way that Cuba didn't return immediately to the OAS, because if they want to come back to the OAS, they have to see what they do with the Democratic Charter and with the Convention on Human Rights. So nobody ever spoke again about Cuba. But anyway, when I was leaving the Assembly, somebody said, after this, you'll have this is a complete success. I mean, your re-election is assured. And of course, we had the coup in Honduras a month later, and everybody felt that it was a complete failure. After nine cases in which the action of the OAS had been completely successful. But let's talk about Honduras. This organization that was only local, that never had anything to do with the UN or with the European Union or with anybody, managed to have every country in the world, reject the coup in Honduras. I think that was a success by itself, and it wouldn't have been achieved by any other organization. And I think it was important, it is still important, that as we move forward to restore Honduras into the organization, something I'm very much in favor of. I'm very much in favor of doing that as fast as possible. The measure of the situation in Honduras has been normalized is precisely that. So the OAS, after all, seems to matter. The OAS, after all, seems to matter. I think that now I come to the crux of this matter. We are not threatened by the Rio group or by the new Commonwealth of the Caribbean and the Latin American nations, or by somebody who wants to have a OAS without the US, or by somebody who wants to have a lot of people out of the OAS. And once the OAS with a sword going around the continent, creating all kinds of threats and of pressures to the countries, it's threatened by our own belief that we can't do it all together. It's threatened by the fact that somebody wants others to predominate against us. It's threatened exactly by what was not there when we had the summit of the Americas in Trinidad and Tobago. In Trinidad and Tobago, we had a summit of the Americas in which the President of the United States came and said very simply, we want to do policy with you and not for you. And it really felt very well. We all liked that. We want to do that. But if you want to do policy with Latin America, you have to accept Latin America as it is. You can have it your way. This is a region that has changed. The President said it has changed very much. I mean, it has grown economically. It has grown politically. It's much more democratic. And let me say, also, it's more self-assured. Believes more in itself. We have a lot of problems, yes. But after all, it's true. I mean, as President Toledo said it very well. Of course, there are threats to democracy that come from populism. But as he also said, populism finds a fertile ground in which to sow. After all, who else, who better than President Hugo Chavez to say it, as he said it when he was inaugurated in 1999, gentlemen, I am not the cause, I am the consequence. So we have a lot of problems to overcome, of course. And we'll have a lot of setbacks. But it's a continent that is moving. If you want to move with it, you have to accept the fact that we have a lot of diversity. We have a lot of... That the time to put order in the region by ruling it has not come. By the way, yesterday was a piece by Álvaro Vargas Llosa. Álvaro Vargas Llosa, yes. In a newspaper in the country about the possibility, the possibilities of the new Chilean president to act politically in the region. And he has a beautiful sentence in the end. Let me just... This one I have written. He says that the new president will have... I'll say it in Spanish first, and then I'll try to translate it. Una nueva oportunidad para marcar la pauta en este continente de ovejas sin pastor. A new chance to mark, to lead, in this continent of sheep without a shepherd. I don't think that any country in the Americas today feels like a sheep that should be shepherded. And unless that is understood, it's very hard to make good policy in Latin America. So yes, we're in for rough times. I think times are not easy. Because the struggle is on the agenda, which is, as you said, the hemispheric agenda. The hemispheric agenda includes poverty. Poverty is, I would say, in the origin of most of the threats to Latin America today. Even if you take environmental matters, you'll find that the main source of problems in Latin America and the Caribbean is still the lack of sewage, the lack of clean water, the dirty skies, the polluted air, the erosionated land, etc. Those are a big threat. That's a big threat. Crime is a big threat. Trade is a big opportunity and a big problem. Of course, few people understand that most Latin American countries buy more from the U.S. Than most of the main partners. I mean, I think Brazil must buy as much as China today from the U.S. And certainly Argentina or Chile buy more than Russia. And Central America buys more than Eastern Europe of U.S. products. So trade is also an issue. And, of course, as you know, 4 of every 5 migrants. This region has double the migrants than any region than the world. The average of migrants in this region is twice as much as the world's migrants. Most of them come to the U.S. We have a common problem then. And it's very difficult to understand why with such very large hemispheric problems, common hemispheric problems, about which everybody talks in this country. Crime, drug traffic, poverty, climate change and natural catastrophes, migration. I mean, the Latin America and the Caribbean seems to matter so little. I was going to begin initially my comments in the same way you began, saying, well, after all, with Afghanistan and Iraq and all these things, I mean, we understand that there's little time to deal with Latin America and the Caribbean. But frankly, from my point of view, the problems or the issues that we have to deal with in Latin America and the Caribbean are as large as those. Not to mention also the possibility, the recent possibility, of bringing to the region conflicts which are not ours, and therefore creating a problem. Because fortunately, we don't have nuclear proliferation in this region. Because we have a treaty on nuclear proliferation. But that might be a problem too. So what do we have? What do we have to do? I would say, we have to trust the most relevant organization in the region. Of course, there is the possibility of the creation of something new without the U.S. Well, why not strengthen that organization, to which the U.S. which is the largest, the oldest, the strongest one, and to which the U.S. belongs. Everybody has been talking about the U.S. in the last two or three months. Unfortunately, the prediction is that after March 24th, discussion about the OAS will finish again for a few years. I very much agree with most of the suggestions that have been made. We're trying to implement them, and we take note of them. And as you say, some of them are going to appear in our centennial review. The building of the OAS is going to be 100 years, by the way, on the 28th of April. And by the way, President Lleras Camargo was not the only president, was not the first Secretary General of the OAS. He was also the last Director General of the Pan-American Union. This organization has a tradition of 100 years. You don't erase that in a few days or in a few years, unless those who have to believe most in it cease to believe it. And that is about all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, we have some time for the discussion. I'm going to ask the presidents also to make a final round of comments. But maybe it's good at this point to take about five questions from the audience, and then we'll give the floor back to the panelists. So we have the microphones, and I encourage you to raise your hands if you want to weigh in this discussion. Yes, please.
Thank you. Sonia Schott, Global Vision Venezuela. There is not a secret that some people consider that the OAS is agonizing, is dying. And we can't forget that we are having in 10 days elections. How do you see the role of the OAS and the role of the General Secretariat looking into the future? Thank you.
Yes, the gentleman right behind.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, Secretary General. My name is Raul Herrera, Arnold and Porter. I believe in the adage that we should let a thousand flowers bloom, but all within the same solarium. The organization's objectives continue to grow over the years, and I think there's been somewhat of a mission creep, to coin a phrase, and think that if we focus on integration, democracy, and human rights, supported by a robust budget from the member countries, we would strengthen those core competencies. And then once that is established you know, work with the other multilaterals, the IFIs, and the others, because we shouldn't take for granted these three core competencies, I think, of the organization. And I'd be interested in hearing the views of the panelists in this regard.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes. And then we'll stop there.
My name is Alexander Yu. I'm a diplomacy fellow here at Brookings. President Toledo mentioned the China issue. He mentioned that China was bulldozing to the Latin America with, you know, buying resources and doing heavy investments. Is it positive for Latin America or is it negative? What are the, you know, opportunity, threat? But also, how does it affect the United States presence or relationship with Latin America, not only intra-regionally, but also inter-regionally, for example, the Iran issue. How does it affect this relationship? Thank you.
All right. Well, there are no more questions. I'm going to ask the panelists to make some comments. Let's start with President Torrijos. I think you are in a unique position also to comment on the general trends in Central America and the way Central America is perceiving these issues. Having had the Honduras crisis last year, but also there is a permanent discussion here in Washington about the issues related to Nicaragua's democracy, just your general thoughts about the current situation in Central America will be very useful. And I think you're in a unique position also to answer this question about China and China's role in the region. And the reason I say this is that it's no mystery that Panama is the trading hub of the Americas, and a lot of that trade with China goes through Panama, and Panama has also been a major recipient of foreign direct investment, and that has played a very important role in its own economic development in the past few years. So maybe you want to take this to issue Central America, and then China, and of course, anything you want to discuss of what the Secretary General has mentioned about the OAS. Okay.
But let me start with the issue of China. China is doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's no doubt. It's a world player, especially in economics. And it's looking at the world, not only in Latin America, but investment in China is big in Africa, all over the world. And they're assuring that they're going to have the sort of resources to continue to become an important world player, an economic world player. And for Latin America, it's positive. It's at least somebody is buying a raw material that is ensuring that we're going to have prosperity, economic growth, employment in a time of recession. So the issue, more than China, should be what are the other important players as the United States thinking in the long term of their economic development and the development of Latin America. For Panama, as a important player in trade and route because of the canal, there was a big issue a few years ago about how China was supposedly involved in the canal. And it was not only fault, but China is doing what any other power should be doing, looking at where are the future centers of distribution and trying to be there to help out in the trade and commerce. So I do believe it's positive, and I hope that the president of China, even if for the wrong reason, will get the interest of the United States and Europe and other countries to invest in Latin America. It'd be more than welcome because we do need more countries interested in not only buying ore resources, I hope that we can go farther than just being an export of raw material, but become a producers of final goods and increase our capacity of production and service and products that we offer to the world. But it's a commercial issue for the region and a positive one, I might add. But every now and then people try to place it in a different perspective and geopolitical, strategic area, which I don't think is the reason why China is investing in the region, but every now and then it comes. I agree with the Secretary General regarding the OAS that unfortunately after next week, the issue of the reforms of the OAS, their interest in this issue is going to decline, and we're going back maybe to the same. We will bring the fireman, Secretary General, every time there is a problem. We get somebody to blame when it's not solved correctly or when people are not satisfied, but we're not really going to look at what deep changes needed to be made in the organization in order to be effective. And so it's not an easy task for the Secretary General. And I know that that you're going to get a lot of support because, as you said, in your during your time, there were 10 difficult areas that were very well approached with the critics. Every time you do something, you're going to get critics, but really, at the end, things are moving. The issue of Honduras is moving. It's no doubt that all the countries in Central America would like to have some form of going back to normal relations with Honduras. Imagine the neighbor countries in economies that are so interrelated, and you have a problem with customs and governments not talk to each other. So anything from trucking going across the border to main issues in regarding foreign policy is a big cause regarding Honduras. So the process of recognizing Honduras and being a part of the community, world community again, it's going to happen. I think that a lot of countries and areas of are waiting for more signs of the Honduras government. There are compromises that need to be made. Some have already been made about the composition of the government, a commission that would find out the facts of what happened for that coup, because it was a coup. No doubt the overthrown of President Zelaya was not a democratic process whatsoever. And we need to know what's happening. But not only Honduras. The issue is, can we rest that that Latin America is in a unmovable democratic process? I don't think so. I think the fact that the problems in Guatemala with President Colón and now the verdict of the CICIG, the UN organization that is looking for crime and impunity in Guatemala, shows you that that because of the real problem, a very sad problem, some people might try to overthrow the government at that time. And the Organization of American States and the neighbor countries came out in favor of, let's find out the facts, let's find out the truth. But democracy cannot be at stake when something as painful as what happened in Guatemala does occur. And we need to look at the fact that democracy is in a constant threat, not only because populism. I think the lack of vision of political parties and the dialogue of social organizations are in a complete, in an opposite way of what people are thinking. And for political parties to advertise themselves as not being part of the political system, it tells you something's wrong that we need to be working on. And that's a seat for instability for a threat to democracy and something that everybody should be start looking into how we've how we enhance or how we contribute to make sure that democracy is here to stay and that there are no threats for democratic institutions and that the respect and the separation of powers and the check and balance works in all of our country.
Thank you.
That would be my
Thank you very much, President. President Toledo, I don't know if you want to make a
Let me pick up some of the points of the question and then let me reflect on the comments that have been expressed. No, when I said China is crossing the ocean to become a bulldozer as a demander for raw material and as an investment, no, I said it in a good sense. I think the region needs to diversify. It's healthy. Diversify not only to a new markets, but the capture of capital investments for growth. So it's not, I'm just stating a fact. Just as a piece of data, the alliance of convenience between Iran and Venezuela. Now let me share some reflections on what Secretary General OAS have said and my friend President Torrijos. It is true the social agenda. You got me into this. So there is 20 former presidents who the last over 2 years have dedicated the time and experience. We have pulled them out of retirement to trying to work in building the construction of a social agenda for democracy for Latin America for the next 20 years. And we have come out with 16 different items that belongs to public and private policies, recommendations, suggestions, and 63 specific recommendations, and we have presented forward to the sitting presidents at the Ibero-American Summit on December 1st in Portugal. The range of items that goes specifically had to do with potable water and sanitation, had to do with access to healthcare and educational quality, energy for the poor, microcredit, employment, climate change, new indigenous movement that are participating now in the political life of the region, gender, a set of policy recommendations that comes out of the experience of 20 former presidents who had had the responsibility of conducting the destiny of the countries. And I think that we cannot separate the role of the OAS, the multilateral organizations, from the social challenges that we need to meet in the region in order to construct the adequate needed stability politically, economic, social, legal stability that enable us to reach sustained rates of economic growth, that enable us to construct a solid infrastructure of institutions that are accountable to the citizens, that respect human rights, freedom of the press, and independence of power. The social agenda, in my view, is an indispensable partner of the economic efforts that we are making in the region. Because if we only rely on trickle-down concept, if we don't have explicit social policies that are directed to target groups, women and youth in Latin America, we are going to have a lot of turmoil. And that turmoil, in turn, generates political instability. And I agree, the Hugo Chavez's of the region are not the cause of the problem. They are the manifestation of what we have not been able to do the last 150 years of reducing the levels of poverty and social exclusion. And people are losing faith in democracy. Now, I've been a president for 5 years. Part of that I have the privilege to share, to be parallel with President Torrijos. But we have a lot of multinational organizations in the region. The Rio Group, the Ibero-American Summit, the South American Community of Nations, which have changed their name. Mm-hmm. We have the Andean Community of Nations. We have Mercosur. And you know, I've been about...
And you belong to APEC also.
We have, in our case, we have the APEC. And now we will have another meeting. The Latin American, Caribbean, and European Union now. Mm. Well, we have done a lot of meetings. We spent a lot of meetings going to a different place. And with all due respect, at the end of the day, it's public relations at the international level. So I guess what I'm saying is that OAS is being put right at the spotlight, looking at the future. Because of the changes that have taken place in the region, there are new challenges. And to confront particularly the changes or the challenges in the social area and in the political area, in my personal view, there is no space for ambiguity. I think we need to put some leadership looking at the new challenges. And that includes all the countries of the Americas. I have had the privilege to address several times the OAS, but if people manipulate institutions to re-elect, that's not very democratic. If people manipulate the institutions to be there for 15 or 20 years, because there is a fertile land of poverty, and then it's easy to give fish away instead of providing the right to learn how to fish, that leads you to undermine democracy. So I think one of the challenges that all of us have is how do we strengthen democratic institutions? And that shouldn't be only a responsibility of OAS, but also of the United States and Canada. It's also the responsibility of each individual country of us. It is true what you have said, that the OAS will be whatever each individual country wants to be. Well, you know, presidents are absorbed in a day-to-day responsibility of managing. And so I'm sure the region is going to deposit on March 24th the trust on your hands again, our friend in Sulsa. But with that deposit, it comes an enormous challenge that, of course, it will be too heavy for you to do it alone. And so you can count on the region, but the leadership that led you to your election in the first term, I'm sure, is going to be even stronger for a second period, because I don't think you have a contender from here to March 24th.
Thank you, President Toledo. Just 2 words. Well, I was not going to take more questions, but just one from you.
If I have the mic?
Yes, just hold on 1 second. The microphone is coming.
Okay. Well, my name is Jorge Gestoso. I'm with the GTN. And having heard the three of you, and having had the opportunity to interview each of you separately, the honor, I would like to ask a question to the three of you. First of all, I remember of having interviewed Mr. Insulza and ask him about how he could see in the future of the Americas the possibility to be like a European Union, to be an American Union from Alaska to Tierra del Fuego. And Mr. Insulza said to me, I think that the further that we can go in terms of integration will be free trade agreements between the U.S. and the different countries of Latin America. No further than that. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, Mr. Toledo is saying, quick figures, 200 million poor, about a region of about 500 million. Let's say that 50% of the region is poor. 200 years of history. If in 200 years of independence, we manage to create a region that half of the region is poor, something is wrong with the institutions, with the political parties, with the inequality, as you mentioned, of the disparity of distribution of the wealth. If we do have that disparity, we'll never, ever be able to be the word democracy could really work, because democracy will be the participation of all the demo, the people. So if something is creating that disparity, is that democracy, it doesn't work. Mm. On the other hand, Mr. Insulza said to me, 40% of the budget of the OAS is paid by the U.S. If Mr. Insulza is in a table in a restaurant that someone is paying 40% of the bill of that menu, probably, if he does in a regular basis, in the longer run, we'll say, you know what, let's discuss what we're going to eat because I'm paying 40% of the tab. So my question, after the long story long, will be, Mr. Insulza has to preside an organization for the next 5 years where mostly there is someone on the table that will dictate or suggest what will be the menu. On the other hand, he has, 25, 30 countries that could agree or disagree with that. But Mr. Insulza has to walk the fine line to keep everybody happy, which an incredible disparity in the region that is threatening democracy, and a disparity that disparity reflects in the organization that he has to preside. So isn't that a little bit naive to think that after 200 years of disparities in the region and the organization, Mr. Insulza could be the miracle man that could change everything?
Thank you. Can I begin? Well, we're now going to go to Secretary General Insulza, but before I give the floor back to you, and of course you have this new element to discuss, let me add, and more in the form of a question, the issue of the bill that was presented to the U.S. Senate by Senators Menendez and Kerry. The first thing I should say about the bill is that any reform to the OAS that begins in Washington, that especially in the U.S. Congress, can have the potential to backfire, especially because of the tensions in the region. And I think especially because at the end, one issue that is implicit in what has been said today is that because of economic progress, because of the strengthening of democracy in the region, Latin America has matured, and as it has matured, it also has a sense of security, of confidence. And that, of course, is reflected in this idea of a more balanced or horizontal, as you put it, relation with the U.S. But in spite of that, I think there are some elements in that bill that deserve some attention. I think there are three aspects in that bill. One, is to ask the Secretary General to come forward and discuss in general with the general public and spaces like this his ideas. And this is exactly what we're doing today. And so in that sense, we're already anticipating that aspect of the bill. The second element has to do with the budget, as Jorge was mentioning. If you think really about this issue of the budget, any organization, of course, can improve the efficiency in which it spends its budget. Any organization has that possibility. But the numbers of the OAS are rather small. The OAS is, at the most, a $100 million a year organization. Think of that as the cost of preserving peace, dialogue, making sure that democratic practices are enforced in countries, and compare that with the budget on the U.S. spends on wars, for example. It's one-tenth of the daily expenditures in wars. So having an organization in the hemisphere that does that for that cost, I think it's a very sound investment. But of course, there is always the room for more transparency and improving the allocation and efficiency of resources. And there is a third element in that bill, which touches on the issue that President Toledo was mentioning on the proliferation of summits, and the fact that many of those summits are more, you know, public affairs and public relations issues. But there is one summit that really does belong to the OAS, or should belong to the OAS, which is the Summit of the Americas. And what the bill is saying is, well, let's make sure that the Summit of the Americas, which is the one of those forums that has a hemispheric dimension, comes more under the umbrella of the OAS, and really the OAS is more leading a role in that process. I think that's a sound idea. So I wanted to put in the context of this discussion these bills with those comments. Now, Secretary General Insulza, there are so many issues that you can touch on your final remarks, and you have to be selective. But at the end of the day, I would summarize some of the comments that were made here. That yes, we're Latin Americans. We're very happy with trade with China. We're very happy of expanding our engagement with the rest of the world. But if there is one distinct element about Latin America relative to China, it's precisely what's convening us today, which is democracy and the importance of democracy. And that's kind of one of the values in our region that we have to preserve. And the OAS is the institution that has made that responsibility. And I think that's the one aspect that we should always be very proud about our region and preserve and respect and enhance to the extent possible. Secretary General Insulza.
Well, thank you very much. First, about the agenda. I very much share with President Toledo and President Torrijos the notion that the basic problem of democracy today in the region is governance and the quality of government rather than elected democracy. We have good elections almost everywhere. Actually, we have observed about 50 of them. We observe only by invitation, by the way. So when somebody says, why did you observe this one or that one, it's because we were not invited. And we have observed about 50 elections in the region, and most of them have been absolutely transparent. And I think that's something that we have gained along with the years, not only the region, but also the organization. We are much more capable to do that now. But the big problem has to do basically with what some would call the conditions of a republic. A republic is a government of laws, not a government of people. And we still are very far from that. And I very much agree with some of the comments President Toledo made. I mean, the whole idea of that we can change the rules every time because we have some kind of a majority is very much contrary to a notion of a republic. And the problem for the independence of justice is a problem. The problem of access to justice is a problem in several of our countries. We have a problem of separation of powers, which is really, I'm talking about basically the judiciary. We still have a lot of problems of efficiency, and not only of corruption, also of efficiency. So if I had to stress one One issue, I would basically talk about the rule of law. And the charter of the Americans gives you, the Democratic Charter gives you a very clear menu on what you should do. We still have to continue, of course, with our basic issues of human rights and elections and all that part. That's also part of our mandate. So I would say that for the first question. The other one has to do basically something similar. I mean, and it has to do with what Jorge was saying at the moment also. How many things can the OAS do? I will talk about the budget in a moment. You're challenging to that. I'll talk about that. But how many things can the OAS do? I think that certainly at a certain point, we will have to decide what things we can do at the OAS and what things have to be better done in other institutions of the Inter-American system. For example, we don't deal now with matters of development in terms of, I mean, of loans. And there was a time in the Alliance for Progress where the OAS managed a lot of money by itself. No, we don't do that. That's the Inter-American Development Bank. And when people tell me, how much are you going to give for the reconstruction of Haiti? Fortunately, I was with Luis Alberto Moreno, and I said, why don't you ask Moreno how much money we are going to give for the reconstruction of Haiti, because we are. But we can do a lot in terms of on two issues which have to do with development greatly. One is the whole issue that I think our region has to improve a lot, still to a lot, in institutional terms to deal with the problems of development. And second is human capacity. We have some very good programs on development of human resources. We have, a 50-year-old scholarship program who has educated thousands of people in the Americas. We can still do a great support on that if we concentrate on some issues. But development is essential because, you see, some of our partners, which were born democratic, I'm talking about the Caribbean countries, are more here for development than to deal with the other matters. You ask them, if they had to choose, they would say, we want the OAS to help us on development matters. So we have to keep a certain balance. And that leads us to the third problem. How do you do it with a budget of $83 million? You said about one-tenth. I'm not really sure if that's the budget of one day of the United Nations.
No, it's the military budget one day.
I mean, the United Nations, only the area dealing with military missions and all that has a budget of $6 billion a year. Now, I'm not going to be that shy, I'm going to say, with the money we get from our friends, from our observer countries and from some members, we go to an expenditure that in a good year can reach about $140 million. But certainly that's very hard. It's very difficult to do that and deal with all the democratic issues, with all the electoral observation issues, with all the human rights issues, with all the development issues, and with all this, the public security issue, which we also want to get involved in. And at the same time, keep offices in the countries and all that. So what's the trend? The trend is to lower that amount, not to increase it. When I came to the OAS, I was wrongly informed, that the last changes in the budget, in the contributions of the country had taken place in 1990 when Canada joined. That's true. There were changes. I mean, the quotas were redistributed to make room for Canada, but we still got the same amount we had before. I mean, the other countries went down. It wasn't that Canada was added to the organization. Canada substituted some of the. By the way, Canada is one of the countries that still helps more in budgeting the programs of the OAS, aside from its contribution. So I don't know really when the last raise had taken place. All I know is that the General Assembly, which is the ruling body of the organization, had decided to give every year or every 2 years cost of living increases to the staff of the OAS. In the same way as the UN, the UN has a system of cost of living increases. Of course, the U.S. has another resolution saying that the contributions increase together with the cost of living. The OAS doesn't have that organization. So we have had to do with the, except one raise we got in 2006, we have lived with a frozen budget for over 20 years. If the OAS was receiving the amount of money it received in 1990, it would be receiving about $120 or $130 million. That's the sad truth. So what's the problem now? The problem, when I got to the OAS, my friend Vijay Naudi, who had run the business for the last 7 months, because he was the interim secretary general, compared the OAS to a sinking ship. It's still moving, but the sails are all torn. It's full of patches and all that. And even if every country paid its contributions, he said, we still wouldn't make it. Well, we got all the countries to pay their contributions. Some countries that were delayed for 3 or 4 years paid up, and we could keep things going. We kept things going. But now that bonanza of countries paying what they had not paid before is over. So instead of raising the contributions or instead of raising the budget, we're supposed to cut $9 million for the next year. And we're going to do it. All I'm asking the countries is that if I cut that money, please at least pass a resolution so that the cost of living allowances will continue, will be followed by cost of living contributions. Because if not, we will end up with a moment in which there are two employees left, and one has to leave to pay the contribution to the cost of living allowance of the other one. Actually, the staff of the OAS has been reduced by one third in the past decade, by one third. So I will say this: I fully agree with the proposals of the bill presented by Senators Menendez and Kerry. Not partially, I fully agree. I agree that we have to, we have increased transparency so much that, by the way, we are qualified every year with the best, with an excellent grade by the Board of Auditors, which is chaired by the Auditor of the State Department. But that shows that we are spending the money where we say we are going to spend it. Now we're going to go to a more challenging system, which is evaluation by results, not only by accounting, but not only accountability, but also results accountability. We certainly are willing to discuss with everybody the budget and everything, but let's face it, guys. I mean, we can't do it with the money the countries are paying. And if somebody wants to reduce the budget of the OAS even more, that's going to be a disaster. Of course, not a disaster. We will have to select some things not to do. What I'm going to propose to the council during the year is to let some things undone, definitely. Leave some tasks of the OAS. Something I will discuss with the council, of course. The council is discussing at this way, by the way, at this moment, a reduction of mandates. But frankly, the only thing I don't agree with what everything that has been said is that, the OAS is a big pot of money that is being misspent. The OAS is a very small pot of money, and I can assure you it does the best it can do with the little money it gets. And if we don't do something about it, everybody, we are going to reserve the sink, that the boat is going to sink. Well, that's my answer. But as for the bill, I share very much the goals of the bill. I think they're very well oriented. I very much agree with them. Frankly, I had notice of them before it was done, so I don't have any quarrel with that. I would argue a couple of things with Senator Lugar's report, but that could be another time.
Thank you. Well, it's 11:05. We were supposed to finish at 11, but well, we're four Latin Americans in the panel, so what else can you expect? President Torrijos wants to make a final comment.
Just one short comment. I think that people are blaming democracy for not solving problems. A democracy is not supposed to solve our problems. The ones that get elected in through a democratic process are the ones who are supposed to solve the problems. That's why they get elected. Democracy will give you the right not to re-elect somebody, to get him out of the government if he's not doing it right. So people are getting mixed up. But on the other hand, there are not 200 years of failure. I mean, there's a progress to that have been made. Progress of integration, progress in the fact that the Latin American countries are not looking for any superpower to solve their own problems. I think the fact that the new Commonwealth of Latin America and the Caribbean shows you willingness of our own to look at our problems and trying to find solutions. You can start with the Contadora group when the problem is in Central America, then the Grupo de Rio, and all the other different groups that have been trying to solve. The fact that that countries in Latin America, when Haiti's problem started, besides the terrible earthquake, were present. They have a big presence, shows you a new willingness of the countries to face their own fate and to look positive of the fate. I think we need to change. It's a big difference in countries and people in different countries. For example, in Asia, people have no doubt that what's coming in the future is better than what happened in the past. We need to do the same for Latin America. If people in Latin America could think and believe that the future is going to be better than the past, I have no doubt that democracy is here to stay, and that policy, politics, and institutions would change at a rate that would make a difference for the well-being of the people. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much, President Torrijos. I want to especially thank you for having come to Washington just for this event. You made the point, and you made the effort, and we were absolutely delighted with your presence today. And I would just finish by saying we hope that you come back soon, especially because things seem to be moving in the area of the free trade agreement that you worked so hard for. And that I certainly hope that now that President Obama has made these announcement of doubling U.S. exports between now and 2015, the U.S. government will begin by realizing that the best way to achieve that goal is precisely to have free trade agreements with Panama, Colombia, and South Korea. So hopefully you will be able to harvest that seed that you work on for so long. Thank you, all of you, for coming today, and we'll hope to see you soon again. Thank you.